Chapter 37. The Queen's Gifts.
What was that?
Said Queen Glamdis as she came awake. Great Queen, we have returned, said Jack.
I've told you not to use that Great Queen stuff on me, Glamdis said crossly. Call me Mother.
Yes, Mother, said both Jack and Thorgil.
Well, was it successful? Did you find Mimi as well?
Yes, great, Mother, said Jack.
Good. I never know what the Norns are going to do. Sometimes they send people into a dark wood to wander.
Why do you entertain the Norns? Thorgil asked. It can't be interesting watching them play chess.
You'd be surprised, the Mountain Queen said. I learn all sorts of things about what's going to happen. Most of it's sad, of course. People die. Whole islands disappear under the sea. I feel it gives me a certain control over the future. I saw Olaf's death long before it happened.
You did? Thorgil's eyes were wide.
Such as he could never live to old age.
The Mountain Queen sighed.
He was too grand and too impossibly pig-headed. Well, I see I can't offer you any food here. Why don't we go to the harem and I'll ask the louts to fix us some snacks?
They walked down the long room, Queen Glamdis leading and Jack and Thorgil following behind. The golden chess pieces were strewn across the playing board. Why do you serve the Norns food when they don't seem to eat? Jack asked, eyeing the bowls full of dust.
They like to wither things, Glamdis replied. Turning bread to mould and fruit to slime is as good as a feast to them. I gave up trying to understand Norns years ago.
The meal in the harem was one of the best memories Jack took away from Jotunheim. Boldhorn presided over the festivities, and Golden Bristles and Boldheart joined in. Two louts sang a wandering, tuneless kind of song, while others danced the Jotunheim reel. It was loud and cheerful, with much stamping. Fonn directed a play about the retreat from Utgard across the breaking ice. They ate surprisingly good pastries, meat pies, and flummery. The best kind, with nutmeg and cream. Thorgil went into raptures over each new dish. I had no idea things could taste so good, she exclaimed. This is all so delicious.
Is she all right? Whispered Queen Glamdis to Jack.
Just crazy in a new way, Jack whispered back. They left early in the morning, as dawn reddened the hall of the Mountain Queen. Glamdis and her family accompanied them down the long tunnels to the bottom of the mountain. For a people who had haunted Jack's nightmares so long, he was surprisingly sad to leave them. I can't believe one of you bit off Treefoot's leg, he said as they came out of the cold, windswept courtyard at the beginning of the U-shaped valley.
Believe it, said Fonn. Humans and trolls have been at war for a long time. We have a truce for the moment to honour Olaf Onebrow, but we battle for the same lands. When winter ruled the earth, so did we. Now summer comes on and we are weakened, but we will never give up.
And neither will we, Thorgil cried. She was dressed in wolverine fur, with smart little boots and a new sword at her belt. To refuse battle would do neither of us honour.
We will meet at Ragnarök, said Fonn gravely.
At Ragnarök, shrilled Thorgil. Boldheart, who was perched on Jack's shoulder, cawed and shook his head.
I give you these parting gifts, said the Mountain Queen, signalling to a young lout.
He brought out cloaks of a material Jack couldn't identify. They shimmered like the light of a glacier, and they smelled sharp and sweet at the same time.
They're made of silk we harvest from the spiders that live in our forests, the Queen said.
How do you get silk from a spider? Thought Jack, who only understood how to shear sheep.
You may have noticed the curtains in our halls. They're of the same substance, strong enough to withstand the heaviest storm and light enough to wear comfortably. This silk has the property of taking on the colours around it. These cloaks will hide you from the dragon.
Glamdis held up the garments. They were long and roomy. The hoods would easily conceal a face. Jack saw their colour shift from ice white to the dark blue of the Mountain Queen's dress. Thank you, Great Queen, Mother, said Jack, bowing. This is indeed generous. I am deeply honoured, said Thorgil, bowing as well.
Don't go near the rocks on either side of the valley. Walk next to the river. Travel by dark, hide by day. When you reach the forest, go north around the field of flowers. The elk have made trails. You should come out on the fjord and meet your friends.
Jack was dressed in his marten fur coat and the cowskin boots that gripped the ice. He carried Olaf's sunstone for Skaki and the bottle of songmead from Mimir's well for Rún in a bag around his neck. Thorgil wore the little silver hammer she'd been given by Olaf. Both of them had sacks of provisions and various weapons. Last of all, the Queen gestured to Bolthorn, who came out with Jack's staff wrapped in cloth.
You take it,
Bolthorn said, holding it out as though it were a poisonous snake.
I thought about casting it into the chasm beneath my window, said the Queen. Then I thought about keeping it from you. It's the staff of a fire wizard. I last saw one when Dragon Tongue visited, and I can't tell you how much trouble he caused. Still, it would be unworthy to steal from a guest. You may take it home with you, but be warned. If you ever return with that in your possession, you'll find out right away whether we trolls bite off legs.
She grinned, showing her dainty but businesslike fangs. I promise, said Jack, bowing again. He hefted the staff. It had turned black, but it wasn't burned. It had called out flame from the heart of Jotunheim, and in the process had gone beyond fire to something harder and stronger. Jack felt a faint thrumming in the wood when he put his hand on it. They said farewell then, thanking the Jotuns again for their generosity. Jack hugged Golden Bristles as best he could, given his short arms and the boar's huge neck. Goodbye, Piggy, he said. I wish you could come along, but you wouldn't find much welcome in Middle-earth. The troll boar waffled and nuzzled Jack's hair. Then Jack, Thorgil and Boldheart set off down the U-shaped valley to the distant forest. For a while they could hear Forath singing a farewell whale song. I wish you wouldn't do that, Jack thought. It makes me feel so dreadfully sad. They turned after a mile and looked back. The ice mountain seemed unmarked. They couldn't make out any windows, turrets, walkways, or doors. It was as though the Jotuns had folded themselves inside, and all the glaciers and ice crags were deserted. This cloak smells weird, said Thorgil. They were tucked into a deep side channel of the river. They had to lie on a sandbar crusted with ice. The wind scoured the ground just above their heads, but they were hidden from the dragon. Jack had shared out meat pies and cider. It's made of spider silk. Maybe spiders smell weird. I've never been close enough to tell, he said. Boldheart was huddled against him, pecking meat shreds from Jack's hand. I keep expecting the cloth to be sticky. Just don't walk through a swarm of flies. This is so boring, Thorgil fumed. Why can't we go out in daylight if the cloaks can hide us? The Queen had some reason for telling us to lie low. The dragon can't see us. There's nothing else out here. You can see for miles. Thorgil balled up her cloak and jammed it into the sand. The dragon had been visible for some time as a puff of smoke by day and a red fire at night. Occasionally she spread her wings and floated over the valley looking for prey. So far she hadn't got anything. I wonder if she's laid more eggs, Jack thought. He felt vaguely guilty about killing her brood, but they hadn't had a choice. I'm bored, said Thorgil. The new Thorgil was almost as annoying as the old one. She no longer fell into mindless rages, though she was perfectly capable of getting angry, but she was filled with a thirst for new experiences. She had missed so much in her former life that every rock and clump of moss enthralled her. She wanted more and more and more entertainment to make up for lost time. Sitting with her for hours was sheer torture. Why can't we find out whether the dragon can see us? She complained. We could always run back here. Because, Jack said for the 10th time that day, once the dragon notices us, she isn't going to give up. She'll check every nook and cranny. Boldheart could talk to her. Tell her we taste bad or something. She's not going to believe him, Jack said. Boldheart had revealed, and Thorgil had translated, that he told the dragon she had a rival at the other end of the valley. He'd worked her into such a rage, she'd sailed off to do battle. Then he'd incited the green dragonlet to kill his sisters. I suppose not, grumbled Thorgil. She felt for the rune at her neck. Jack watched her with a sick feeling of loss. You can't take it off, you know, he said. Once removed, it can never be returned. You've told me that about 1,000 times. I'm never going to take it off. It makes me feel safe. I know, thought Jack sadly. He smoothed the feathers on Boldheart's head. The crow nibbled his fingers. The wind whistled and howled, and from a great distance they heard the dragon scream. She did this regularly, whether from rage or merely for exercise, Jack didn't know. It was when she was silent that they had to worry. I'm bored. Tell me a story, said Thorgil. Jack had gone through his entire collection in the days they'd spent crossing the valley. He'd told her all of Father's gory martyrdom tales and all of the bard sagas and even all of Lucy's bedtime stories. He'd described every inch of the farm and every rock on the beach back home. He was almost reduced to introducing her to the black-faced sheep. He stood up and looked over the edge of the embankment. The forest wasn't that far away. The dragon had sounded as though she was flying away from them, perhaps back to her nest. He shaded his eyes. He thought he saw a puff of smoke from the distant cliff. We might make it, he said. What? Really? Cried Thorgil, popping up to look around the valley. That's where Olaf's funeral pyre was, and there's the trail into the forest, Jack said. It should only take a couple of hours. I don't know. Maybe we should wait for dusk. But Thorgil had already shouldered her bags and wrapped herself up in the cloak. She was out before he could stop her. Stop! Don't you ever think anything through? Jack hurried after her while struggling with his own carrying bags and cloak. Boldheart sailed overhead. Jack had to admit it was a lot nicer travelling by day. They kept bumping into things in the dark or falling on patches of ice. The sunlight was exhilarating, and even the wind wasn't bad in their warm clothes. The Jotuns had certainly been generous. Jack wondered for the first time why they had clothes that fit human children. No, he thought, they couldn't have. But he didn't really know. There was a war between Jotunheim and Middle-earth. Children might not be safer here than they'd been in Gizo's village. "Isn't this fine?" Thorgil chirruped. Jack could hardly see her under the silk cloak. She looked as clear as a soap bubble. He supposed he was equally hidden, except for his hand gripping the ashwood staff. Jack was of two minds about the staff. He could keep it at the ready, or he could sling it on his back and depend on stealth. He slung it onto his back under the cloak. He wasn't sure he could raise fire in a hurry, and anyhow, what difference did fire make to a dragon? Jack looked back occasionally to see whether the dragon had moved. A thin column of smoke put his fears to rest. "Those boulders are such interesting colours," Thorgil said. "I used to think they were all grey, but they aren't. Some are like oyster shells, and others are like fog, and still others are speckled like a robin's egg. And the shadows! You'd think they were the same, but some are dark and others are bright, and, oh, look at that one! It's purple!" "Save me from Thorgil's enthusiasm," Jack silently prayed. He thought he'd never miss her rages and sulks. At least when she was sulking, she was quiet. The forest drew ever nearer. The dragon seemed content to roost. Things might actually work out, Jack thought. They were still walking along the river, and to their right, at the edge of the valley where it went up into the surrounding hills, was a huge cream-coloured boulder. Around it was a cluster of cream-coloured rocks. "Isn't that sweet?" Thorgil warbled. "It's like a mother rock with her babies." "Wonderful," thought Jack. "Now we're going to stop and pet the baby rocks." A long scream echoed over the valley. "Run, Thorgil, the dragon's up!" yelled Jack. She reacted instantly. She might sound feather-brained, but the shield maiden of old was still underneath. "Hide in the rocks," Thorgil cried. "We're not going to make the trees." "Wait," shouted Jack, trying to keep up with her. "The queen told us to stay away from them." "No time!" She reached the rocks first and crouched down. The cloak instantly took on a cream colour. Thorgil was even the right size, though a little lumpier than the others. Jack threw himself down beside her. They both fought to regain their breath as the dragon, to go by her cries, zigzagged back and forth over the valley. "She can't see us. I told you she couldn't see us," whispered Thorgil. "I hope she leaves soon. This is uncomfortable," said Jack. "Lean against the rocks." "I say."
"What?"
"This one's soft," said Thorgil. Jack felt the surface by his side. It was soft. The dragon's cries retreated up the valley toward the ice mountain. He opened the cloak slightly to look. The rocks were all the same size, which was odd in itself, and the odour they gave off was so intense it made him queasy. "This place smells like..." The giant boulder suddenly stood up on eight giant legs and began frantically gathering the little rocks into a silk bag. Chapter 38 Spider Music. Jack desperately tried to reach his staff. He couldn't undo it without throwing off his cloak. The spider moved like lightning, collecting her eggs. She whisked each one up with whatever those things were on either side of her fangs and tucked them away. When she got to Thorgil, she puzzled over the shape. She reached back with two of her legs and whipped out a long line of silk. This she coiled around Thorgil until the girl looked just like one of the eggs. Thorgil, cursing richly, disappeared into the sack. Satisfied, the spider reached for Jack. He felt the creature's fang probe gently, and then he felt himself twirled round and round as the silk rope belted him in. He was lifted, handled in those awful things beside the fangs, and settled onto a soft bed of spider eggs. The spider took off, running. Jack could feel each footfall as the egg sac jounced and swayed. He could hardly breathe, and what air he did get was drenched in that sharp, sweet, nauseating smell. He struggled to reach the knife on his belt. The ashwood staff dug into his back. The mother spider ran for a long time. Presently, she seemed to swing through the air and land with a jarring thump. She moved more slowly then, picking her way carefully, until at last she stopped and dropped the egg sac. Jack heard wind whistling outside. He tried to saw a hole with the knife, but spider silk, for something that looked delicate, was as tough as leather. Jack sawed and stabbed until he saw spots before his eyes. His heart pounded, and he was slippery with sweat. He saw the tip of a fang penetrate the silk. "You could at least help me," complained Thorgil. "I can't do all the work while you lounge around." "You're wonderful," Jack murmured. It wasn't a fang. It was Thorgil's sword. He immediately set about widening the hole. When he was able to wriggle out, he was astounded at the sight before him. They were high in a canopy of giant trees. Wind whipped the branches, bringing a welcome freedom from the spider stink. The whole of whatever they were sitting on billowed and swayed, so that they had to hang on to the sack to keep from falling. "What is that?" said Thorgil. Jack squinted. The colours shifted as the structure moved, but eventually he was able to make out the shape. "I think it's a huge spider web," he said. Because the silk took on the colours around it, parts looked as transparent as air, while others were dark green or brown from the trees below. The sack was anchored to a particularly tall fir that jutted above the web. In one direction, there was only trees. In the other, Jack saw round webs covering the forest as far as he could see. Here and there, huge cream-coloured spiders sat with their legs outspread. Some had egg sacs to the side, like the one next to Jack and Thorgil. Others had dismal lumps, where some creature had been captured. A few of these lumps were being fed upon. "Now what?" said Thorgil. Jack had to hand it to her. Where most people would have screamed and fainted, the shield maiden was ready for battle. Jack looked down. They were so high, the forest floor was lost in darkness. To reach it, they would have to pass through the web. If it was sticky, and it probably was, they wouldn't get far. "Maybe we should go up," he suggested. They retrieved their food and water bags from the sack. Climbing would have been easy if the wind hadn't been blowing, but of course it was. Jack wasn't thrilled about the height either. They struggled through the branches to a perch near the top where they could sit. The spider was brooding at the centre of her web. Jack could see the bulge of her enormous belly and her spinnerets. At least she was facing away. "Why didn't she eat us?" said Thorgil, ever practical. "We smelled right," said Jack. "Our cloaks made us seem like baby spiders." "I'm trying to look on the bright side," the shield maiden said, clutching the rune. "Our situation, as far as I can tell, is this. We're so high we'd never survive if we fell. But sooner or later we'll get too tired to hold on, or the spider will find us first and eat us. If we wait long enough, the eggs will hatch, and 100 or so babies will climb up and eat us. That's the bright side, said Jack. I'm only trying to work things out, Thorgil said. Maybe you should use that staff to call up fire. Jack untied the staff. His back was sore from where it had pressed against him. He pointed it at the mother spider and felt it thrum in response. All around, the trees went whisper, whisper, whisper. I don't have much control over this, he said. What if I set the whole forest on fire? You'll just have to be careful, Thorgil said crossly. Jack pointed the staff again. This doesn't feel right. Would it feel better to have the juice sucked out of you? I think there's another way. Oh, Freya! Swore Thorgil. Jack saw a huge eagle, like the one that had attacked them on the ice bridge, sail overhead. It turned and circled the tree. Thorgil drew her sword. The eagle veered away with a harsh scream, but it came back with its claws out and ran into a strand of spiderweb. The bird squawked and tried to free itself, but it only fell onto the main web, miring itself completely. The spider dashed out and sank her fangs into it. The eagle tore at her with its beak and claws, but it was greatly outmatched. Soon it was wrapped in silk, while the spider sat back, waiting for her poison to work. After a while, the bird stopped moving. Jack and Thorgil clung to each other as they listened to the monotonous sucking sound of the spider's feast. When she was finished, she dropped the husk to the forest floor far below. "Now will you call up fire?" said Thorgil. "Wait," said Jack. The giant spider approached the egg sack. Jack tensed, his staff at the ready in case she made a rush up the tree. But she merely set about mending the hole the eagle had torn in her web. She moved back and forth, pulling long ropes of silk from her spinnerets. When she had laid one line, she squatted down and deposited a glob of goo. Delicately, she plucked the rope with one claw-tipped leg. The goo immediately vibrated out into droplets along the line. Jack watched intently. This was extremely interesting. Not all of the web was sticky. If you could step between the droplets, you wouldn't stick at all. The spider occasionally leaned back and looked up at the tree where Thorgil and Jack were. At the top of her body was a turret with 8 shiny black eyes, but she didn't seem to see the 2 humans cowering in the branches. Now the spider did another interesting thing. She walked up to the egg sack and rested her fangs on it, apparently lost in an ecstasy of motherhood. Jack was convinced that was exactly what she was doing. He could feel the whisper of her thoughts and the tiny responses from the 100 or so eggs inside. She plucked rhythmically at a thread holding the sack. The whispering intensified, becoming more joyous. "You know, I think that's a lullaby," said Jack. "That's a huge, ugly, people-eating spider," Thorgil said. "Don't go soft on me. You're the one who cooed over the baby rocks. I didn't know what they were. Burn all of them up. They're our enemies." Thorgil looked fierce enough to attack 100 spiders. "I've been studying the mother. She seems almost blind. She didn't see us when she looked straight at us. I suppose the dragon had to get close before she realized the danger to her young. The spider can't hear either, or she would have gotten you when you were cursing so loudly in the egg sack. So she has weaknesses. It makes it easier to kill her." But Jack couldn't bring himself to do it. When he drank from Mimir's well, he'd remembered those moments when everything felt exactly right. When Mother sang to the bees or Father built the house, they were doing it so lovingly and well. The simplest activities were lit up from inside. They were filled with the life force. What the mother spider was doing now was the same. It was necessary to kill, to feed or protect one's family and self. That was what the spider had done with the eagle. If she attacked Jack or Thorgil, he would have to slay her. But Jack also understood that if he killed the spider without need, he would lose his power and his music would go from him. He put the staff away.
"You are so stupid!" fumed Thorgil.
She cursed him roundly as they clung to the tree trunk in the tossing wind.
"I should go down there and stab her, and stab all those eggs, too!"
Jack knew she wouldn't. The reckless frenzy that had driven Thorgil was gone. She was capable of great courage and daring, but she wouldn't throw her life away. In the early afternoon, the spider returned to her vigil in the middle of the web. The wind dropped, and Jack felt safe enough to pass out the last of the meat pies and cider.
"Our last meal," Thorgil said sarcastically.
"Look," said Jack, pointing. In the distance, they saw a tiny speck. It grew larger until they could see it was a single crow flying back and forth. Jack stood up and waved. Boldheart sped straight to the top of the tree. He balanced there, cooing and warbling.
"I'm glad to see you too," said Jack. "As you can tell, we're in a mess. You mustn't get close to the web."
"Tell Jack to kill that spider," ordered Thorgil. Boldheart cawed back.
"He says, idiot bird, he says you don't have to kill her. You can send her to sleep. I think it should be a permanent sleep, but who listens to me?"
"All right," said Jack, wondering how this could be done. "What then? Do we climb down?" Boldheart clacked and burbled and cawed, going on at great length.
"He says, wait here, help is on the way," said Thorgil.
That was a lot of conversation for such a short translation. I'm sure he said more.
"You'll never know,"
Thorgil said smugly. Boldheart sped off, and Jack climbed down to the egg sack. The spider loomed at the middle of her web. One eagle probably wouldn't satisfy her for long. She might be ready for dessert. He drew the staff from the sling on his back just in case and cleared his throat. He began singing. The words came out awkwardly. He couldn't seem to get the right music. How did you serenade a deaf spider? After a while, Jack stopped. It was a waste of time. The spider ignored him and he'd run out of poetry. Far away, a large bird blundered into one of the other webs and was pounced on.
Birds must be what these things live on, Jack thought.
Bugs wouldn't even whet their appetites.
How did you serenade a deaf spider?
The same way a spider sings lullabies to her young.
Of course!
Jack had studied the harp with the bard, but he hadn't made much headway. His voice was his best talent. Voice wouldn't do him any good here, though. He put the staff away. He needed both hands for what he was about to do.
Spiders are nearly blind and deaf, but their sense of touch makes up for it. They can feel every quiver on their webs, thought Jack.
Wonderful! He'd have to come up with something that felt like music and not dinner. He remembered the rhythm the mother spider had plucked when she was soothing her eggs. It was a thing Jack noticed automatically, being musical.
I think I can repeat it, he thought.
If I'm wrong, I'll find out soon enough. And I thought the Northmen were a tough audience. Jack leaned over the edge of the egg sack. He could see, barely, the long strands of the web. If you thought about it right, you could imagine they were harp strings. He lay on his stomach and studied them. He'd have to pluck the strands between the globs of goo, which were also hard to see. The whole web was hard to see. That, of course, was how it worked. Jack found two dark green lines stretching over a cluster of fir trees. He thought he could just make out a safe area. He reached out. Spring! The spider reared up on all eight legs. It was like she was on tiptoe. Jack froze. He certainly had her attention.
"I'll come down and defend you," called Thorgil. "Stay where you are. I know what I'm doing," cried Jack.
"I hope," he thought. At least the spider didn't react to his voice. She really was deaf. "I'll have to do this fast," he thought. "No stopping, no matter what she does. My only chance of success is to play the lullaby back to her. It has to be perfect. No stopping." Jack then began the most important music recital of his life. He emptied his mind of everything but the rhythm. He plucked and picked, he chanted and carolled, he yowled and yodelled and twanged. He needed the sound to keep his fingers true. The spider crept so close she was almost on top of him. She cast a dire shadow that almost made him faint, but he didn't stop. He could see her fangs glint and her mouthparts working. He didn't stop. Jack felt her quiver. The motion came to him through the web. He felt an answering quiver from the eggs below. All the little spiderlings were dancing in their shells. The spider suddenly keeled over. Her body flattened sideways in an untidy tangle of legs. She was still alive, he knew, because he could see the tips of her claws move. She was dreaming. Jack climbed the tree as fast as he could go. "Where's Baldheart?" he cried. "Where's the help he promised? I don't know how long she's going to be out. Merciful heavens! I don't ever want to do that again." He burst into sobs. "Over there," said Thorgil, pointing. Jack saw four enormous white birds and one small black one gliding above the forest. He was shaking so much he thought he'd fall out of the tree. His teeth were chattering. "It's all right. You did it," said Thorgil, putting her arm around him. "The owls said they wouldn't come until the spider was asleep. I have to say, that was the worst music I ever heard." "How do you know? You aren't a spider," said Jack. "Thank Freya for that," swore Thorgil. The owls came in a cluster.
"Hoo-ha! Hoo-ha! Hoo-ha! Whoa-whoa-whoa!"
they cried. They barked and cackled and shrieked and hissed.
"They say we have to leave at once. They'll take you first," said Thorgil.
Jack didn't understand what she meant until the owls clamped onto his arms and legs and flew off.
"I can't take much more of this," he thought, as the forest sped by below.
After a short time, the owls deposited him in a meadow and took off. They returned with Thorgil.
"By Thor, that's a wonderful way to travel," she exclaimed. "If only we could train birds to carry us, we could attack our enemies from the air."
"Hoo-ha! Woo-woo-woo!"
said one of the owls.
"He's thanking you for saving their lives." "I didn't know about that," said Thorgil. "It happened in the little valley after we escaped the dragon. They were starving to death, and I took them outside so they could hunt again," Jack said.
"You're very welcome." He bowed to the birds. Baldheart sat on a nearby bush and warbled.
"Baldheart said they've told him a safe way to the fjord," said Thorgil.
"Hoo-ah! Hoo-ah! Kraf! Kah-kah!"
screamed the owls.
"What was that?" asked Jack. "They're giving their opinion of spiders. I don't think I'll translate it," said Thorgil.
Jack and Thorgil waved goodbye to the snowy owls, and then, with Baldheart leading the way, they found an elk trail at the edge of the meadow. On the way, they gathered blueberries, each one as big as a plum, and cracked giant hazelnuts for lunch. In late afternoon, they reached the fjord. Jack built a fire, a normal one, using quartz and steel, because he couldn't trust the Ashwood staff to make anything small. Soon they saw the ship approaching over the water. Something large was hanging on the prow. It was a scaly green head with a crest of spikes and long whiskers. Eric Prettyface roared greetings, and the other Northmen all cheered. Imagine, thought Jack, I'm actually glad to see Northmen. The longboat came in close, and the warriors jumped out to make it steady.
Welcome back, bellowed Eric Prettyface. Was it a success? Did you kick the trolls' butts? Look at the sea serpent I caught.
And Rune said,
Where's Olaf?
Chapter 39 Farewell to Jotunheim.
It was fated,
said Rune that night as they lay at anchor in the fjord. They had started too late to reach the open sea.
I always knew Odin would call Olaf in the prime of his life. Warriors like him are too great for Middle-earth.
We saw his funeral pyre, Sven the Vengeful said. We didn't know what it was then. It went straight up to Valhalla. I thought it was a pair of dragons fighting, said Eric the Rash.
There was a dragon. Jack was mortally tired, but he felt he owed Olaf's friends at least part of the story tonight. She flew back and forth over the flames, shrieking.
I think I heard that, said Sven.
She was honouring Olaf, Thorgil said heavily.
She had been crying off and on all evening. Now that there was no danger to occupy her, she could give herself up to grief.
Wasn't that wonderful? Said Sven with an envious sigh. And you say there was a troll bear at his feet?
Yes, said Jack.
A first-rate funeral, Eric Prettyface declared.
I've warned you about talking after dark, Eric, my friend, said Rune. We won't be safe until we leave Jotunheim, so silence is important.
Oh, all right.
The Northmen sat quietly under the stars. Even the stars seemed larger in Jotunheim. The water was as still as a sheet of black ice. One by one, the warriors lay down to sleep, except for Rune, who was on watch and never slept much anyway. Boldheart kept him company, but soon nodded off like the others. Jack, for all his exhaustion, found it hard to relax. So much had happened. So much had changed. He had never dreamed in his little village on the English coast that he would ever meet such things as dragons and trolls. They were something that lived far away. Well, here he was, far away. Jack resettled the grain bag he was using as a pillow. The deck was hard, and the bilge was as fragrant as ever. Whisper, 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 went the trees, birds, and animals of Jotunheim in his mind. Jack covered his ears, knowing it would do no good. He didn't know how he was going to cure Frith yet, but Mimir's well had taught him not to try to force the order of things. Leaves uncurled and flowers opened when it was their time. Knowledge would be given to him when the moment came. Toward dawn he awoke and saw Rune sitting by the sea serpent's head at the prow. A silvery light shone on the water. Jack got up and picked his way through the sleeping bodies.
That's going to stink in a couple of days, said Rune, running his fingers over the scales. I wouldn't dream of asking Eric Prettyface to leave it behind, though. He was so proud of killing it. It followed us around from the day we left you, working up its nerve to attack. It's only half grown, you see.
I see, said Jack, noting that the head alone weighed twice what Eric Prettyface did.
It came at us yesterday, tried to wrap itself around the boat and sink us. bad mistake.
Roon, said Jack.
Yes?
We found Mimi as well.
What great good fortune! I hoped you had, but we were speaking of Olaf earlier, and I didn't want to change the subject.
The old warrior's voice was sad. I don't want to talk about it with the others. Not yet. I don't think it would be right.
I'll shut them up, Roon said decisively. I'll tell them it has to do with the magic. Did you drink?
Yes, and so did Thorgil.
She did? I thought she seemed different. She didn't once try to hurt anybody. Tell me, how did it taste?
The longing in the old man's voice was almost unbearable. You tell me, said Jack, handing him the bottle with the poppy on the side.
Oh,
Roon said with a deep sigh. It's all right. I told the Norns you had sacrificed your voice to defend your friends and had given me your best poem. That seemed to satisfy them.
You've seen Norns too? How wonderful!
I didn't like them, said Jack.
Shh! It's never good to offend the forces that govern our lives. I can really drink this?
Jack nodded. Roon opened the bottle and drank. A light came into his eyes, and he stood straighter than Jack had ever seen him do. So, what does it taste like? Jack said.
Like the sun coming up after winter, like rain after drought, like joy after sorrow.
Your voice! Jack cried, for the old man no longer whispered. His words were strong and new. Roon didn't have a young man's voice. He would never again be the magnificent singer of his youth, but he sounded deeper and more moving.
Why is everyone making a racket? Grumbled Sven the Vengeful. I haven't had nearly the rest I wanted. Are you talking in your sleep again, Eric Prettyface?
Not me,
said Eric Prettyface. That morning they came to the mouth of the fjord. The cliffs on either side were seething with birds, and thousands of nests clung to the rocks. The water was silver with haddock and salmon. Boldheart chased off a few seagulls when they tried to land on the sea serpent's head.
We're leaving Jotunheim, Jack said, somewhat regretfully.
And entering Middle Earth, said Roon.
The birds swirled and screamed. Thorgil crouched in the bilge with her hands over her ears.
She understands what they say, Jack whispered.
They came to open water and turned south on a bright grey-green sea with a brisk wind. Eric the Rash and Eric Prettyface put up the sail. Jack felt as though something had lifted that had weighed on him ever since they'd entered Jotunheim.
This place welcomes us, he said in wonder as he gazed at the coastline slipping by to their left.
This is where we belong, said Roon. Jotunheim ever hated our presence.
Jack turned and looked out over the vast ocean toward the place where Utgard had lain. Fonn's great-great-great-grandmother had walked from there when it was a sea of ice. But each year summer moved closer to the heart of the frost giant's world.
I can't understand the seagulls any more, Thorgil said. Well, I can, but I can't pick up every single word.
Don't you like that? You hated listening to them, said Jack.
I did, but it was still kind of nice.
Magic is closer to the surface in Jotunheim, said Roon. I'm sure you haven't lost the ability. You'll just have to work harder at it.
And Jack, too, felt the life force had moved deeper. It was there, but it would not come easily to his bidding. Which wasn't a bad thing, he decided, grasping the blackened ashwood staff.
He'd become afraid to summon its power in Jotunheim. The fire was too wild and unpredictable. They travelled south, camping at night on little beaches. Jack and Thorgil told the warriors most of what happened, keeping only the Norns and Mimir's well to themselves. The Northmen were mightily impressed with Thorgil's slaying of the dragonlet, as well as Jack's triumph over the spider. They hadn't been idle either. Besides the fight with the sea serpent, which now stank to the heavens, they'd battled with a giant, evil-tempered pike.
"Tried to get me every time I drew up water," said Sven the Vengeful. "I finally showed it what was what." "Tasted great with cranberries," commented Eric Prettyface.
Then there had been a battle with a pair of huge wolverines when the warriors went foraging on shore, and an encounter with a giant lynx, and one afternoon, when Eric the Rash took a nap under a tree, he woke to find that a slug had devoured most of his shirt and part of the skin underneath. They met more ships as they approached the entrance to King Ivar's fjord. The fishermen cheered as they passed and begged to be allowed to visit and take a close look at the sea serpent. Eric Prettyface threw his chest out proudly. "But he'll never equal Olaf Wonbro," Jack thought with a pain over his heart. "None of them will." The sound of the sea died away as they went inland. The water became placid, and here and there on the shore Jack saw deer and rabbits, normal-sized deer and ordinary rabbits. Far away to the north lay high mountains covered in snow. "Jotunheim," thought Jack. It looked unreal. Perhaps it was unreal. Presently they saw the farms high in the hills and the steep meadows dotted with sheep. They saw the dock, which was filling up with people, and beyond, on a shoulder of dark blue stone as bleak and lifeless as metal, Ivar's palace. Heidi, Dotti and Lotti scanned the ship anxiously. "Oh, heavens, how can I tell them?" thought Jack. In the end, no one had to tell them. If Olaf wasn't visible, he wasn't there. You couldn't hide him. Dotti and Lotti screamed and tore their clothes. Heidi wept silently after the manner of her people. Skaki led them all back to Olaf's house. "I told him," said Heidi, standing before the long fire in the middle of the hall. "If you take the boy and his sister to the court, it will be your doom. I saw him lying in a dark forest with his life-blood soaking into the earth. Poor Oxbrain." "It wasn't quite like that," said Jack. "The visions are never exact. The meaning was clear." Dotti, Lotti and the children sat solemnly around the sides of the fire trough, with Olaf's friends and companions. Skaki occupied Olaf's great chair. It was too large for him, and always would be. Skaki, at age 16, was now head of the household.
"He died as he wished in battle," said Roon in his new, strong voice.
"And had a funeral worthy of a king," cried Thorgil.
Then she sang. Half a forest was felled to hold him. At his feet lay the troll bear, direful and deadly, yet no match for Odin's beloved. The Valkyries called to him from the hills, the gates of Valhalla swung wide, and even the Mountain Queen wept at his passing. A hush fell over the hall. For a moment no one moved. Then Roon said,
"That was poetry."
"Women can't make poetry," said Sven the Vengeful.
Everyone turned to Thorgil, expecting her to fall into one of her rages. She only sat down, looking stunned. Boldheart sailed from the rafters to her shoulder and warbled into her ear.
"I don't know how I did it either," Thorgil said. but thanks for the compliment.
She's talking to birds, whispered one of the smaller children. Does that mean she's a witch?
Dotty shushed him. It means she's a wise woman, Jack said.
But she's making poetry. Surely that's unnatural, insisted Sven.
Again, everyone turned to Thorgil, waiting for her to have a tantrum. Nothing happened.
Thorgil, said Heidi, drawing out the name. Do you feel all right?
There's nothing wrong with her, Jack cried. Thorgil Olaf's daughter can do whatever she likes. He accepted her. Why can't you? She fought the troll bear by his side. She killed a young dragon. She tasted its blood by accident, just as Sigurd did. That's why she understands birds now. She drank from Mimir's well. That's why she can make poetry now. Why can't you accept that?
The long fire crackled and danced in a wind that came in under the eaves. The animals Olaf had carved on the rafters seemed to stir.
You shame us, murmured Skarki.
I didn't mean to, stammered Jack. It's just that...
No, you're right, said the boy, standing. And now he did resemble Olaf.
I name you sister, Thorgil Olaf's daughter. I welcome you to the family.
And I name you daughter, said Heidi. And so do Dotty and Lotty.
She glared at the two junior wives. It was too much for Thorgil. She was used to being the outcast. So much friendliness overwhelmed her, and she burst into tears and fled the hall.
Where will she go? Said Jack.
No one else seemed disturbed by the shield maiden's departure.
Up the hill to find the king's dogs, Rune said calmly. Slasher, Wolfbane, Hellhag and Shreddy will be delighted. They haven't seen her yet.
Now, said Heidi in her smoky voice, tell me about the Mountain Queen weeping over Olaf. It seemed Heidi wasn't completely ignorant of Olaf's activities. She had noted her husband's trips loaded with presents and had concluded he had an extra wife.
But a troll? She exclaimed. Had the man no taste at all?
The queen is rather nice.
Oof! Gasped Jack, as Rune elbowed him in the stomach.
But ugly, very ugly, he finished.
At Heidi's insistence, Jack described Glamdis.
Orange hair sprouting from her head, 9 feet tall, fangs. Was Oxbrain insane?
Seethed the wise woman. Dotty and Lotty looked considerably cheered up by Heidi's annoyance. Then Jack explained how the troll maidens practiced marriage by capture, and how the Mountain Queen had a harem of 16 louts. He told the fascinated assembly about the miserable human who had fathered Frothi and Frith. He painted pictures of his human family on the walls, Jack said. At least Olaf escaped that fate. He was able to go and come as he pleased.
Yes, well, Oxbrain was impossible for anyone to control, said Heidi, somewhat mollified.
He couldn't help being captured, Lotty pointed out.
No, no, of course not.
Heidi shook her head.
And he was so big and beautiful.
All three of the wives sighed. As for Olaf's friends and companions, they were delighted with the story.
He made a troll queen fall in love with him. What a feat! Said Treefoot, completely wowed. What a man! Said Ael Longspear.
Chapter 40 Freya's Fen.
If you're going to be a skald, you must look the part, said Rune, stepping back to observe Jack's white robe.
It was Rune's own, shortened to fit the boy. A message had been sent to King Ivar the week before, but no welcome had been issued until today. Tonight was the full moon, and tomorrow was the day set forth for Freya's sacrifice. Jack was deeply worried by the delay, but he could do nothing about it. No one apparently entered Frith's presence without permission. "You'd think she'd be anxious to get her hair back," he thought. "But she probably enjoys making me suffer." "This doesn't feel right," he said, belting the robe to keep it on. It was still too large. He knew real bards were old, fierce and scary. Jack didn't feel scary. Scared was more like it.
"Shh! You have to start somewhere. Frith is going to be difficult and you'll need to impress her. Do you know what you're going to do?"
"No,"
Jack said miserably.
"It will come to you," Rune said.
Thorgil sat by the door, tapping her foot with impatience. She was dressed in her wolverine coat from Jotunheim. Her boots had been brushed and her sword polished. She was even clean, having been dragged to the sauna that afternoon.
"I'm going with you," said Heidi. "Is that a good idea?" said Rune. "Perhaps not, but it will be interesting," said the woman. "I make Frith nervous, which may be worth a great deal."
Heidi was dressed in a dark blue robe embroidered with birds and fish. Her hair was braided in two loops on either side of her head. They looked like the horns of some fantastic animal. She wore a necklace of silver charms, eyes, legs, and other body parts. She made Jack nervous too.
"Come on," said Thorgil.
Boldheart had chosen to ride on her shoulder. Jack felt slightly jealous, but he had bigger worries than a faithless bird. He grasped his staff and followed Rune out the door. Night wasn't far off. The evening chorus of birds had begun, and long shafts of golden light crossed their path. The harvest moon had already risen. It was almost as large as a Jotunheim moon, Jack thought, as he glimpsed it between the trees. An owl hooted.
"Woo-hoo-hoo!"
But it was a small brown bird, not something that could carry you off. Skaki led the way as head of the house. Thorgil and Heidi followed, chatting like the best of friends. Thorgil had calmed down since leaving Jotunheim, but she still exclaimed over marvels she had surely seen many times. Heidi listened patiently. Now and then the wise woman explained how a flower could be used, or what had made that form in the grass. Jack was having trouble walking because he wasn't used to robes.
"Wait," said Rune when they passed an oak tree.
The old warrior cut off a long, thin branch. This he twisted into a kind of crown and set it on Jack's head.
"Dragon Tongue used to wear oak leaves when he was about to work magic. I don't know why."
"I don't either," thought Jack. "Work magic? Half of what he did was an accident. The other half went out of control. I'm not a bard. I'm a 12-year-old farm brat. The most important job I ever had at home was mucking out the barn."
"You're quite remarkable," said Rune quietly, as though he could see into Jack's mind.
They'd fallen behind the others. Jack could hear Thorgil warbling about a speckled toadstool and Heidi's low voice explaining how poisonous it was.
"First you impressed Dragon Tongue, then Olaf, and Olaf wasn't the most perceptive of men," Rune said. "You went on a quest through Jotunheim and came out the other end alive. You survived a troll bear and a dragon. You made friends with the Mountain Queen. You drank from Mimir's well and you outwitted a giant spider. Many warriors would give their sword arm for such a record."
"Please," said Jack, blushing. "I'm nothing special. I'm just a farm brat dressed up in fancy clothes."
Listen to me, and listen well. One of the first things you learn when you become a Skald is that you must not lie.
But I'm not lying. Jack was startled by Rune's sudden anger.
Your power depends on knowing what you are, both bad and good. Now, everything I've said about you is true. Deny it, and, well, you might as well spit into Mimir's well.
The old warrior strode ahead and joined the others. Jack followed, bewildered by what had just happened. He was a farm brat, but he was also everything Rune had said. To deny his achievements did seem to be a form of lying. I guess I'm kind of heroic.
Jack walked along, deep in thought. The sun had set by the time they emerged from the forest. King Ivar's hall was lit from within and without, for they were expected. A crowd of curious people had gathered to see how Jack would restore Frith's hair to her. They moved aside respectfully, and Jack heard a woman say,
"Doesn't he look impressive? He's a real Skald from across the sea, trained by Dragon Tongue. I wish we could get our ale to pay attention to music."
"Ale's about as tuneful as Freya's cats," said her husband resignedly.
Jack straightened up. He was a Skald from across the sea. He was Dragon Tongue's heir. Giant spiders swooned when he played. The inside of King Ivar's hall was a shock. Filthy straw covered the floor. Bones from old feasts lay everywhere, and someone had vomited in a corner. No one had bothered to clean it up. Fleas pattered against Jack's legs as he walked, and over all hung a dank, sour smell. Boldheart gripped Thorgil's shoulder a little tighter. At the far end, the king sat on his throne, looking bloated and sick. His beard was matted, and his clothes were speckled with grease. Next to him, Queen Frith glowered at the visitors. She looked worse than last time, lumpier and less wholesome. She didn't even have the honest ugliness of a troll.
"Good heavens! Have they been sitting here the whole time?"
Jack thought. It seemed they'd been perched there for weeks, waiting for his return. The priests of Freya and Odin stood at their side. They looked as though they couldn't wait to flee the room.
"The quest has been fulfilled," said Rune.
Ivar looked up. His eyes were almost buried in puffy flesh.
"Really? That's nice. Did you hear that, my troll flower? The boy has returned. Now you can have your pretty hair back."
"About time," said the queen, in a nasty, whining voice.
"Get up here and fix me."
"Remember the conditions we agreed on," said Rune.
"Yes, yes, the bribe. The boy and his sister go free."
"And must be returned home," said Rune.
"I know what we agreed on. You took your sweet time in Jotunheim. Now get off your backside and work magic."
Jack stepped forward, staff in hand. He felt a faint warmth in the blackened wood.
"Where's Lucy?" he said.
"Who? I don't know any Lucy."
The queen sagged over her chair like a steamed pudding in its bag.
"The thrall I gave you," said Thorgil, moving to stand by Jack.
She had her hand on her sword. Jack hoped she wouldn't draw it, or at least not yet.
"Oh, that! She was such a disappointment. Wouldn't talk or look at me. All she did was moan." "Where is she?" cried Jack.
He felt the staff thrum with power. He knew he could draw fire from the earth without any effort now. Rage drew it forth. Thorgil put her hand on his arm.
"Great Queen, the child was part of the conditions. Without her, there will be no healing."
That was an exceedingly brave thing for Thorgil to do. You didn't say no to a half-troll shapeshifter if you wanted to stay healthy. Frith loomed out of her chair with the shadows boiling up behind her.
"She's in Freya's cart," Freya's priest said quickly. "She's been there a long time, waiting for the sacrifice."
"Then I must go to her," said Heidi. For the first time, Frith noticed the wise woman's presence.
"You hell hag!" she spat out. "What are you doing in my fine hall with your nasty spells and witchcraft?"
"Trying to keep my skirts clean," said Heidi. The birds and fish on her robe glowed, and her eyes were dark and dangerous.
"Get out and take that croaking spy of Odin's with you."
"Gladly," said Heidi, holding out her arm for Boldheart. "You should pray the girl is well," she added in her smoky voice. "I would not wish to be you if she isn't."
"Get out! Get out!"
shrieked Frith. She began throwing things around, a goblet, plates, a footstool.
"Now, now, my little troll flower," said King Ivar.
"Where's your old hare?" said Jack, feeling he should take charge of the situation. "I'll need it if I'm going to undo the charm."
"There!"
screamed Frith. She kicked a basket at him. It rolled, and a disgusting sludge dribbled out the side.
"That doesn't look like hair," Thorgil said.
"It isn't. It went bad after you left. My mother made it, and it's turned to slime, typical of her stupid enchantments."
Frith was so beside herself she could hardly breathe.
"Then I'll have to find a substitute," Jack said.
He'd had some idea of singing her old hair back, but that was clearly impossible now. What to do, what to do, he thought. Panic threatened to swamp his mind. Tonight was the harvest moon, and tomorrow was the sacrifice to Freya. Lucy would be drawn to Freya's meadow, the site of the sacrificial ceremony, by the cats. There she would be garlanded and presented with a little image of the goddess. Then her hands would be tied to the cart. The priest would push it into the mist-shrouded fen to float, but ultimately to sink beneath its dark waters. Jack took a deep breath. In his mind's eye, he saw the sacred meadow with the full moon overhead. And then he knew what to say.
"This is how your beauty will be restored," he cried.
Rune, Skarki, and Thorgil flinched. They turned to him in amazement. Jack knew he sounded different. His voice filled the hall, and he could see fear in the eyes of his friends and King Ivar. He was no longer a mere boy, but an agent of the Norns. They spoke through him from their haunt by Mimir's well.
"You will cut hair from Freya's cats, not too much. Take a third and leave the rest for the cats to keep themselves warm. Go to Freya's meadow and lay out a white cloth to catch the moonlight. Over this you must place the hair and lie down upon it. When the moon is at zenith, your beauty will be restored."